Welcome to LSE Limelight from the Beaver Sound, where we unfold the best stories from students around LSE, with me, Yasmina O'Sullivan. Today I'm speaking with the organisers of Freedom of Mind LSE, a festival for mental health. Before we start, a trigger warning. There will be topics of depression in this podcast, so do be aware. Now enjoy the episode.
It's so important to highlight people around LSE, groups and individuals who are doing interesting things. We need to talk about it more and we need to celebrate it more. Today I have Ella Marshall, who is a second year History and International Relations student, and Anna Seifu, is that right? Cool. Is doing social policy and is also a second year. And these two, along with Will Banks, are also organising the Freedom of Mind LSE Festival next week. Might be this week, depending on when this interview comes out. We shall see. from the 7th to the 11th of October. So I just want to dive right in. Upon reading the stuff that you've got on social media, I'm really interested to see that you talk about mental health a lot. I don't see the words like mental illness, and you talk about mental well-being. So can you just tell me, how do you define, what do you see mental health as being?
So mental health to me is like, is your thoughts, feelings and behaviours. That's how it's kind of always been explained to me. It's the equivalent of your physical health, but within your mind. That's what it is. So it's kind of the reason why we talk about mental health rather than mental illness is it's about creating like a, what's called parity of esteem between the physical and the mental. So when I first started doing mental health activism, which was like 2016, one of the first things that I used to do with people is like this kind of word association game. So when you say physical well-being, people will say like apple, running, diets. If you say like mental health, people will say depression, they'll say psychiatric wards, they'll say self-harm. Whereas actually like that association is like totally wrong, because we should all be caring for our mental health and thinking about it in the same positive way that we think about our physical well-being. Of course, you can have problems with your physical body, you can have problems with your mental body, but you should be kind of looking after them in your daily life like equally, in equal amounts. And often when you're looking after your mental well-being, you're also looking after your physical well-being, and vice versa. So the terms mental health and mental well-being, those kind of more positive words, are very much about like normalizing this idea that we have something within our brain that we need to look after ourselves to keep ourselves afloat.
Amazing.
Yeah, just to build on that is, when I think of mental health, I think of the relationship within yourself and to yourself. And then that can feel like quite an isolating thing. Like, you have to first understand where you're coming from to then portray it to other people. That's the whole point of talking more about mental health, creating a more collaborative and more open way of doing this.
So if you're talking about it as kind of like a muscle, this mental health that we need to care for, you two, how do you in your daily lives practice mental health?
Well, first of all, mindfulness is a big, is equivalent to exercise. When you're exercising your ability to interpret your thoughts and your feelings and sort of reflect on things that have happened in the day, social situations, just reflecting on, but giving yourself space to understand how you're responding to them, which helps to stop spirals. And I've done a few like silent retreats, which is a more extreme way of sort of taking a complete step away from society and societal pressures. But in that, it's taking some of those things I've learnt from there and sort of incorporating that into daily life and how we can live better.
Interesting. Yeah. Where did you do these silent retreats?
In Devon.
Oh.
It's a place called Gaia House.
Cool.
Definitely would plug. And it's an amazing way to sort of just take a step back.
Oh, I actually didn't know that about you. So
there we go. That's fantastic. No, a silent retreat sounds amazing. I want to do that.
So for me, I guess like any time where I'm like actively doing something for myself, like being kind to myself, so even if it's like spending time with friends, or it could be the classic self-care stuff like having a bath, etc., anytime where I'm like making a conscious effort to make myself happy, like for me that's always like just that's boosting kind of how I feel about myself and like where I stand, and will stop the kind of whole like spiraling into stress and constantly feeling like I'm having to work, whether it be for uni or whether it be for projects like this. So it's always just about taking that time to concentrate on myself. And I think also changing environment. So even if the environment. So for example, university, even if I'm not stressed about uni, but if I feel stressed in this environment, it's always nice to like take myself out of here. Like during exam season especially, I got really into the routine of going to Hampstead Heath, and that just like it feels like you're not in London. Just taking yourself into nature or just somewhere else is, I think that's a really good way to kind of change your mental well-being. And often if you take yourself out of an environment, it could either change things positively, or if the problem like persists, then you realize that there's a real issue and you kind of need to like work out what it is.
I've got to relate with you. Hampstead Heath is a good place. Mainly for all the dogs.
Yeah. Like,
the number of times I've gone with my boyfriend, just walked around and just stared at dogs, even though we don't own a dog. Just like dream about stealing one. That's fantastic. Really interesting. And also the fact that it's so simple. Like it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to go on a mindfulness software and spend 2 hours a day. It's just doing something for yourself.
Yeah.
Very cool. So diving into the festival, which everyone should go to, it's going to be from the 7th of October to the 11th of October, which is this week when the interview comes out. The panel which really jumped out to me was the men panel, which is on the 8th of October. Obviously, masculinity is a huge issue, and you've only got a short panel. But how is the panel going to speak to the very varied range of experiences of masculinity, you know, different sexual orientations, identities, and kind of the shared trauma which some have from toxic masculinity?
So I think the way that the panel is really going to speak to those different experiences is by the fact that our panel is very varied, like in terms of cultural background, in terms of sexuality, in terms of their professions and all of that kind of stuff. So there's no like two people on the panel who will necessarily like have the same thing to say. So that's how we're hoping to really tap into the different experiences. I would say that the one thing we're trying to do with this masculinity panel is to move away from the idea of toxic masculinity, because often it's that word toxic that starts making the conversations around it very fraught, especially whenever it's like a woman saying the words toxic masculinity, you can often feel like tensions rise, and kind of reasonably so, men get pretty annoyed at women or other genders telling them how to be men, that sort of thing. And so we're going to use the panel to kind of explore like the visions of like what a modern man is, how like people can consolidate being masculine and caring for their mental health, because I think it's the idea that we should totally leave masculinity behind is something that for a lot of people is far too radical and perhaps unnecessary as well. We're going to even be like looking at things like the Gillette advert that came out and all of that kind of stuff, and see how kind of we can make the conversation less patronising, because I think too often men feel like they're being spoken to. That's the reason why the panel is all male, because like we want it to be a case of men speaking to men. We don't want it to be anyone dictating what masculinity should be, having not experienced it or having not performed it themselves. And yeah, there's very, very few contexts in which I'd feel comfortable having an all-male panel. But like mental health is one area, and I constantly try and explain this to people, where men are totally underrepresented. So it's the one area where actually having an all-male panel is a positive thing, rather than it being kind of discriminatory.
So the second set of panels I really wanted to highlight are the two which really go hand in hand, success and education. Success panel is on
Wednesday the 9th.
Very good. And the education panel. I should also caveat the interview with the fact that both Ella and Anna are really ill and very kindly come in and chatted to me, even though they're so ill. But let's do that again. So success is on
Wednesday the 9th.
And education is on
Friday the 11th.
Fantastic.
We got it.
So at LSE, you know, these are very important. Very simply tell me, why is it so important that we talk about success and mental health?
I think us all and everyone listening as LSE students feel the atmosphere here, and it's an amazing one. It's so driven and it's so ambitious, but it's also got this sort of assumption that to be successful you have to give up your mental health and you have to have a sole focus and you have to just have head down, keep going for it. And that's why I see so many people at the library at 3 a.m. like me last year. So we all play into it, but how can we rethink it? How can we rethink it together and create a more sustainable way of finding our right careers? And that's why we've got such an amazing panel of professionals from different companies who have managed to combine both looking after themselves but also looking out for their own career prospects.
is. So we've got people from like the Bank of England, we've got people from LSE Careers, we've got someone from the Mental Health Foundation who works with kind of people in high-flying careers. And it's something that when we were doing research for this panel, I found out there's an organisation called the City Mental Health Alliance, which is something that's in response to the fact that bankers, people in high-flying careers have been suffering in kind of recent years, that kind of thing. So I think this is going to be a really good one for tapping into the specifics and for people that want to go into those kinds of occupations, for them to come, ask questions, work out what support there is going to be available to them once they graduate.
Specifically on the LSE experience, going to the education panel and how LSE can provide a environment in which mental health is prioritised. Obviously, we're all living in London. Therapy here is incredibly expensive. The NHS has huge amounts of pressure and long waiting lists if you are wanting to get mental health support. LSE provides counselling service, but from my understanding, it's a limited number of sessions. Could you speak on what you wish LSE could do to provide a better environment for mental health and supporting students who feel this incredible amount of pressure?
I guess the ideal situation would be that LSE could put enough money into their wellbeing service to cater for the whole student body, because especially with international students and stuff, accessing the NHS is pretty inaccessible. And so I think realistically, for LSE to be really kind of up to scratch on this, they should have a counselling service that can deal with the whole student body so that people don't have to turn outside of this campus, because otherwise it is kind of, it's a bit of a mess, like in terms of how you access mental health services across the country. I'm from Bristol, it's different there to how it is here, that kind of thing. So we're aiming for that, but I think obviously with Freedom of Mind LSE, it's about culture change as well. And so there are things, ways that professors can teach, ways that professors can kind of ascribe value and meaning to who we are as people and not just the grades that we get, that might go some way to changing things as well.
Going on to the culture panel, which is the one, Ella, that you said you're most excited about. What day is that?
It's Thursday, the 10th of October, which is actually World Mental Health Day.
Very appropriate. So LSE is obviously very unique in the fact that we've got such a large international student population. You know, we're really a place where all cultures can mix and talk. So what is the panel going to do to speak to those differing cultural experiences of mental health? You know, to what extent people from different cultures or people are taught to talk about vulnerability and express vulnerability and struggles with mental health?
So the way that we've kind of themed the discussion is going to be talking about class, race and religion, breaking them down and then kind of giving people and our panellists a chance to talk about the intersectionalities between all of them, because in many ways you could arguably say that all of our cultural backgrounds are different. Like it's very rare that somebody's class, race and religion composite is like the same as somebody else's. So it's about those kind of three aspects. So nationality isn't one of the themes, but obviously we do want that to be spoken about. And it's also about, often when you talk about religion and mental health, there's often a lot of kind of condemnation about the way that some religions or some cultural backgrounds like still regard mental health as kind of, like in some communities it's still deemed to be like the impact of the devil, that kind of thing. And so often when you use the words religion and ethnicity and mental health, there's, especially in like clinical settings, there's some kind of condemnation, idea that you shouldn't mix religion and you shouldn't mix kind of these racial ideas with mental health at all. But actually what we want to do is we want to talk about all of those and we want to like draw, okay, what are the negatives and what are the positives? Should religious leaders be providing mental health support within their communities? Those kinds of things. And we don't want it to be a case of anyone dictating, okay, this culture is wrong, this culture is right, because there's actually something we can learn from all of them and how they all deal with mental health, and whether or not some cultures have a far more amount of stigma related to them, but they also maybe have a better sense of community that supports people better. So we really want to kind of explore the nuances and especially give the audience a really good chance to participate and kind of give their suggestions as well. Like I think it's, as well as it being a Q&A, actually we're probably going to have a lot more audience members at this one like telling us about their experiences, and that's really what we want to document and what we want to explore with this panel.
And I can't overlook the fact that this is a festival. It's not just, you know, panel discussions and academic chat. So can you tell us some of the kind of social things that you've got going on during the week that people need to go to?
We've got a live band karaoke night, which is, I'm so excited for. I did rehearsal with the band the other day and like was just like screeching in the room with them. So that one's going to be really fun. That's on Tuesday the 8th. Tuesday the 8th in Tons from like 9 o'clock. So that's going to be a chance as well to raise money for Maytree, which is a sanctuary in central London that supports people who are experiencing suicidal thoughts or suicidal episodes. So that's going to be like a really good chance to have some fun and raise money.
There's also, we've got some active sessions going on throughout the week. So we've got 2 free yoga sessions, and we're planning for them to be on Thinkers in Field, but we also do the backup rooms. But yeah, so that's going to be a really nice way to be active together and also talk about mental health, but not too
explicitly.
Exactly.
Perfect. Yeah. So we know that the festival is from the 7th to the 11th of October, but is that it? After that, was there no more Freedom of Mind? What's the future for Freedom of Mind, LSE?
So there's actually, Freedom of Mind is still running in Bristol, so there'll be a festival towards the end of October in Bristol as well, so that's going on there. In terms of Freedom of Mind at LSE, we're kind of planning to draw a manifesto up from all of our events. So we want to collect all the experiences, all the ideas, and kind of come up with some very tangible suggestions for the student union and for the school about what they can do, because there's definitely been a lot of frustration around mental health in like recent years, but it's not necessarily ever been communicated in like a specific, like, this is what we want, this is what we need. And obviously, if all of our events are full, we're going to have the biggest mandate that any student organisation has had, because we can say this is what this number of students want and this is what we need. So that's what we're hoping to take to the school. And then we are planning for having like a few events throughout the year. So we definitely won't be gone after the 11th of October.
Fantastic. And can you tell us, where do people need to go to find out about the timetable, find out more about Freedom of Mind LSE, and go to these events?
So Freedom of Mind LSE on Facebook is where we've got all our events, all our event pages, where you get our ticket links. So you do, all our events are free, but you do need ticket links as well. Our Instagram, Twitter, all of them are just FOM LSE.
Well, that's perfect. Thank you so much, girls, for coming on the first LSE Limelight episode. We're very excited about Freedom of Mind, and everyone has to go.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. The fantastic music was by Ashley Leo Mazing. Our interviewees were Ella Marshall and Anna Seifu. I've been your host, Yasmina O'Sullivan. If you're interested in getting involved, just check out The Beaver online.